Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, Mr. Pfeiffer.
Sam, I'd like to talk to you about your father's estate. He left you this.
Your shaving kit.
$150,000. I'm supposed to give to some woman and kid I've never even met?
Record producer Jerry Harper is survived by his wife and son. It's official. I don't exist.
Hi, I'm Sam.
Frankie.
She has my father's eyes and his nose.
I don't understand. You don't have any sisters.
I do now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pfeiffer Fridays, where we walk you through the films of one Michelle Pfeiffer, and every F word automatically has a silent P. I'm Michael McLean.
And I'm Jerry Downey.
And today we are covering 2012's People Like Us, or alternate pronunciation, People Like Us. People Like Us. I think you can say that in many ways. And this stars Chris Pine, Elizabeth Banks, Olivia Wilde, Michael Hall, Daddario, Mark Duplass, Philip Baker Hall, and La Pfeiffer as Lillian Harper, Chris Pine's mom. Now, Jerry, had you seen this before?
I have thought for almost 10 years now that I had.
Yes.
Knew within the first 3 minutes of this movie, I had not. So
you are fabricating on your letterbox that you have seen this.
Okay, so in my defense, 2012 is to this day the year where I saw the most new releases in a year. I saw 120-something movies, like 2012 releases in 2012, because I was mercifully single at that point and would literally just wake up every Saturday and Sunday and go to the first showing of at the Angelica and be like, okay, when this one ends, what's the next showing? Cool, let's buy a ticket for that one. What's the one after that? Like literally four movies back to back, just pacing them out what the newest releases were. So this was before the golden age of Letterboxd. And all I had was my little Excel sheet with title, director, what I rated the movie, and what I would nominate it for. So I'm wondering if People Like Us was like directly above or below a movie I did see and got tripped up in there somewhere because I rated it, which is why for years I was just like, maybe this just wasn't a good movie because I remember nothing about it, but I definitely saw it because my rating is there.
Yeah.
Lies. Complete lies.
You know, I get it, especially with how much you were seeing in that year. It just got lost in the shuffle. I would not be surprised if it just, you got your wires crossed somewhere with how much you were seeing.
Yeah. So this was most definitely a first watch for me. Was it a first for you as well?
Yes. I remember the poster. It's a, you know, very pretty poster with kind of that that Instagram filter. That's an Instagram filter over that poster. Clearly, I'm not sure what it's called, but it's an Instagram filter of these two very pretty people, Elizabeth Banks and Chris Pine.
Who definitely look like they're in a relationship on that poster.
Yes. So to see how the movie turns out, especially once you see what their actual relationship is, you know, they're not parenting that child in the poster. They're not in love. It's a little, it's, you are left guessing, who are these people to each other?
And why do we like them?
And why do we like them? why are those two pretty people like me? But I think, this came out the same weekend as Ted and Magic Mike. Was that in the summer?
Yes, summer of 2012. Okay. And both of those movies made more in their opening weekend than People Like Us did in its entire run.
So yeah, I definitely did not see it because I was not driving at the time. I got my driver's license when I was 18, 19. I was really scared of driving. And I was just taking the bus all the time in high school. So I just made my poor parents drive me everywhere. Had other students carpool me around the place. I'm sure I was a nightmare. But yeah, so I didn't learn to drive and then could properly take myself out to the movies until like the fall of 2012. Mm. So were you walking to the Angelica? Were you driving to the Angelica?
I was driving. Like I was living I was living in Dallas at that point. So the Angelica, like the
I just want an image.
Yeah, the Magnolia was in my neighborhood. So that was a very easy drive. And then the Angelica was just across the highway from my neighborhood. So they were very quick to get to be like, okay, I'm going to get there 15 minutes early to grab my Starbucks and hide it under my coat. Cause they're very hard on you bringing Starbucks into the movie.
Just Starbucks or just extra food and outside food and beverage?
I mean, for me, it was Starbucks. I'm sure it's everything.
Yeah.
But I was always trying to bring Starbucks in.
Okay.
But yeah, just get there in time to get my coffee and bebop into the first movie of the day.
Do you remember it all? Do you remember it all kind of which ones you saw in a day? Do you remember any type of order? Is it too far? Is it too long Lord. Ago?
Yes.
Okay.
But I do remember that I saw Magic Mike and Ted. It's like both of their, not the opening weekend, but certainly the first week they were out.
Okay.
Because I went and saw a matinee of Magic Mike with my friend Karima. And we were the youngest ones there. I was the only guy. We were there with a lot of 40-year-old women who were living their best life. Yeah. And if that's not the way to experience Magic Mike, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
But then Ted, I saw at the Angelica with dear friend of the pod, Miss Laura Saladino. And we just laughed our asses off.
Yeah, because it is funny.
It is.
I remember Ted being funny.
Yeah, that was a good movie to see with her in a theater.
Yeah. So I saw both of those movies probably later on when they came out to rent. I bet I rented Ted from Redbox. Remember Redbox? Oh, yeah. They're still at Walmarts, I think. But yeah, I would go to like the local Walmart in Valdosta, Georgia, where I went to school, and get myself my copy of Ted. But I saw Magic Mike. I rented it from iTunes, and I was like, okay, great. I'm going to be in tech for a show. And so I want something to do. It's going to be dark in the theater, so I don't want to bring a book because I don't have to bring a reading light. So let me bring my laptop and I'll watch Magic Mike. So the beginning of Magic Mike, pretty sure you see Channing Tatum's full bootay.
Oh, you definitely do.
Yeah. So imagine me, dark theater, the theater in the auditorium of Valdosta, not very big. So just seeing a lit up screen in this theater with Channing Tatum's full ass out in the view of the whole technician team and the director.
If they didn't appreciate it, then they were in the wrong. That's all I have to say about that.
Thank you. I definitely, I'm pretty sure I probably closed the laptop and said, I actually think I will read. I think I will read.
Maybe not the movie we should be watching in tech.
But yeah, that's my only Magic Mike memory. I don't remember much else about that movie besides maybe Matthew McConaughey saying there's a lot of rule breakers here tonight. Oh, that Matthew McConaughey impression was stinky. But
well, Michael, do you want to know an interesting fact about Ted and Magic Mike?
Sure.
Michelle Pfeiffer is in none of them. But she is. She is in People Like Us, the other 2012 release we're talking about today.
Okay, great. Great, great, great. Thank you. Awesome. So tell us about People Like Us.
People Like Us, we kick off with Sam Harper. So at minimum, the second Sammy we've seen Michelle Pfeiffer have. One fine day. Mm-hmm. Hashtag team one fine day. So Chris Pine's character, Sam, is definitely in a business that is not wholly legal. He calls it bartering, basically taking oversells from other companies and sending them places that they shouldn't for copious amounts of money. And it's wrong. Like it's all very under the table and illegal.
I'd never heard of that before.
No, I hadn't either. I was just like, this sounds fascinating and something that would definitely land me in jail. Because I'm not patient enough to navigate this bullshit. So he royally screws up and sends boxes of soup on a train, and the boxes explode, and the FTC gets called on his company, essentially. And so he is now in desperate straits for money. And while this is all happening, he finds out his father has died. He does not have a very good relationship with either of his parents, to the point where he tries to get out of the going to the funeral by hiding his license. Mm-hmm. But his very helpful girlfriend, Hannah, which is Olivia Wilde's character, gets them on another flight, and they miss the funeral, but show up just in time for Michelle, playing his mother, to slap him across the face, rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
So he meets his father's lawyer to discuss the estate, finds out that there was no money left, but gets a shaving kit with rolls and rolls of cash in it, thinking that it is for him, when really it is for this kid named Josh. And all the note says is take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so following Josh around at his apartment, which the note also had the address of where they live, Josh's mm-hmm. mom is Frankie Elizabeth Banks. And Sam follows Frankie to an AA meeting where he finds out, oh, she's my sister, half sister. Yeah. They have the same dad. And then it becomes this sort of not cat and mouse game, but Sam is trying to take care of them, but still isn't wanting to give the money because of the quagmire he's in. Mm-hmm. But he starts getting close to Frankie, especially bonding over the fact that they both sort of hated their dad.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes very fond of Josh for no reason, because the kid's a little asshole.
Yeah.
And eventually has to come clean about the fact that they are siblings, which sends Frankie into, she doesn't want to be with him anymore because he's a liar. And it ends with them sort of reconciling, and a sweet, very teetering on melodramatic moment where he finds a film, a video recording of them playing together as kids. So his dad sort of kept track of Frankie, even though he still abandoned them. Michelle's part in this movie is quote unquote supportive mom.
Mm-hmm.
They try to give her more to do with a heart thing that really has no bearing on anything besides sort of keeping Sam in town to take care of her.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's People Like Us. It's very small. It feels just like a very quiet movie, but yeah, it does the job.
So you liked it?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I gave this is a 2.5 movie for me that I gave a half star bump to a 3, because whoever was the casting director on this movie deserved a raise.
Mm-hmm.
It is cast so well for Pine, Banks, and Pfeiffer.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that it actually, for me, made the film a success because of how strong they are.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it is a life-changing movie, and it is certainly not a great movie,
mm-hmm.
but every time this one came close to just really going off the rails, I felt like one of those three pulled it back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was entirely due to them that the movie succeeds. You did not like the movie, I'm gathering.
I didn't love it. There was one moment, one of the kind of early, kind of maybe 30, 45 minutes in, I was trying to pin down what I didn't really gel with. I think it's something to do with the dialogue. You know, a lot of people talk over each other in this movie. It's maybe a bit of a case of the Amy Sherman Palladino in the writing, where it's just lines are on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that for some reason in the scene where Frankie and Josh have to go to a family therapist or a child psychologist, I guess, because Josh has gotten in trouble and has almost been expelled from school for dropping a rock of sodium into the gymnasium pool and causing an explosion. So he has been sent to a child psychologist. And that scene, in terms of like balancing the humor, and maybe it's because the young man playing Josh, I'm sure as an actor, he's totally fine, but the way they make it, the way they write this child as a total asshole just doesn't ring true. It just was seemed like so much was butting heads between what Elizabeth Banks was doing, what little Josh was doing, all within the context of that child psychologist scene. It's like, whoa, what's happening? And I didn't love that.
And that's totally fair. I don't think this is a particularly strong movie by any means. I think it solely succeeds by the performances.
Yeah.
And really by that, I mean the performances of those three.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you can also tell that those are the ones that have had the most attention paid to them in terms of their dialogue and the script. Because, yeah, Josh is just written as an asshole. He's intolerable.
Yeah.
And then you have Hannah, who's there for some reason, but like Olivia Wilde gets the shaft in terms of dialogue.
She sure does.
Yeah. She could have just been a cardboard cutout and it would have had the same impact, because that character is a nothing role that they just want to sort of have there.
I guess is it to point to the fact that almost, because the beginning of the movie, Sam really doesn't have a lot of redeeming qualities either, even though he's in the body of Chris Pine. So do you need that girlfriend character to show, oh, this is a good person, he is capable of love and a relationship? I always wonder why you have a supportive girlfriend there to a clear, not decent human.
I think she's there purely for plot.
Yeah.
Because if she's not there, he doesn't go to that funeral.
Yeah.
And he has to spend as much time. Yeah, he has to get there for the movie to kick off.
Yeah.
So you have to have somebody there that is pushing that. But like,
because if she was still around, he would not be spending as much time with Frankie and Josh.
Right.
But still, Olivia Wilde deserves better.
Yes.
She's played so many of these types of roles. It's very sad to me that she gets the short end of the stick. But luckily,
well, and this was 10 years ago.
She has gone on to She's gone on to do much finer things. I will agree with you on the performances, that it really does lift this up.
Because like you said, I think in a lot of other actors' hands, Sam would kind of be an irredeemable asshole.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about him that just sort of reminds me of like younger Tom Cruise, in that he's so, just this stupidly likable characteristic he exudes regardless of what a douchecock he's being. And so you just sort of go along with him for the ride, because in somebody else's hands where it's just uncomfortable or unlikably arrogant, he's more just sort of charmingly cocky. So even though you know he's not doing great stuff, you kind of forgive it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't dislike him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really smart in order to keep you on board with this character by casting him, because Chris Pine's done that a lot where he's playing characters that could easily be very unlikable, but just this sort of natural charm he has while doing a very good acting job as well.
Mm-hmm.
Keep you on board.
That's a good comparison, the Tom Cruise comparison, because I think maybe in Tom Cruise's really kind of that heyday that he had, could have totally done this movie.
Yes.
Could have totally done this movie. And we've talked about kind of a joke that was made on a Hollywood Reporter actress roundtable in like 2010, I think, 2011, with Annette Bening.
Annette Bening,
Agent of Chaos, Annette Bening, clocking Amy Adams for not liking the script that Hilary Swank read. Hey, that was for your this movie. That was for people like us. And, you know, ultimately, Amy was considered the ever charming Hilary Swank was considered. And of course, now we have Elizabeth Banks.
I can't tell if Hilary Swank was really considered or if she just really wanted the movie.
Yeah, like she was just given the script.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like she just asked her agent for that script. Like, okay, yeah, here you go.
That's what I can't tell from looking at sort of the production history, is if Hilary Swank was actually considered for the role or if she read the script and was trying to campaign hard for it.
I think it was the latter, because I think Elizabeth Banks was the perfect choice for it.
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah, because I was, the whole time I'm sitting there as this movie's beginning and we're getting these first scenes with Elizabeth under our belt, I'm still thinking about Amy Adams was going to play this. Hilary Swank wanted to play this. And trying to, and as the role goes on, no, none of them could have really done this like Elizabeth could have done it. And I think it was definitely so much more was catered toward Elizabeth. You can just kind of tell, especially with the sense of humor, because this really fits. I don't know if it was catered after the fact to her, or if it was written that way, or if she just really took this script and ran with it, because it feels really tailor-made.
Yeah, Elizabeth Banks is such an odd creature for me, because the way she looks does not match her skill set, like where she's mm-hmm. strong, because at the end of the day, Elizabeth Banks is a fucking character actress,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I love her.
Yeah,
she's not content to sort of be a quote-unquote movie star because she's gorgeous and blonde.
Mm-hmm.
She goes on 30 Rock and has, you know, a huge arc on that. She takes all these projects where she's actually Hunger Games.
Oh yeah, like, yeah.
She's perfect. She's Jesus. Perfect like, Effie Trinket.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of why I love her here, is because I'm not even going to get started on Hilary Swank, who would have tanked that role like nothing I can even imagine. But even Amy Adams at this point sort of had this movie star expectation circulating around her that I think does not lend itself to achieving what this character needs to be,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of this frazzled everywoman.
Yeah.
I think Amy Adams had sort of outgrown that character in terms of how audiences perceived her.
Yeah.
Whereas Elizabeth Banks was just like, I got this.
Yeah.
Like, I can absolutely do this. And again, much like Chris Pine, just exudes this charm, like just this natural charm that sort of makes you overlook her flaws as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first scene of her, she's basically blackmailing the principal to keep her kid in school. And yeah. The 180 she makes from sort of being this begging mom, like, please keep my kid in school, to, well, you know, he did get it from your science lab, so I'd hate to have to sue your ass. Because of how she pulls yeah. it out and how she's going about it, you stay on board with her too. Like, it's mm-hmm. they're so well cast to execute these roles.
Because yeah, I think in any other actor's hands, it really could have gotten so into melodrama.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, when Frankie does have to find out that Sam is her brother, oh, I can imagine that being just so much more fraught, and I'm trying to think of how Hilary Swank would have played that. And I think we wouldn't have probably stuck with them for like an hour and a half till we find out the truth.
I agree with that. I also just think that Elizabeth Banks seemed very comfortable sort of allowing Frankie to be a really large supporting character. Whereas if you cast Hilary Swank and Amy Adams, Frankie immediately probably turns into a leading lady.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly even larger than Sam, if yeah. it's still Chris Pine that you're cast opposite.
Yeah.
And I think the balancing act, since it really is Sam's story, is thrown off in that equation. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the other thing. You cast an actress who's very intelligent in terms of knowing what the story is, mm-hmm. and is playing it for that rather than who she is as an actress.
I think that makes sense to me. And yeah, and then we have Michelle doing her, I guess, a really chill LA mom. And she is in mourning as well. She's, I got the biggest like Joni Mitchell vibe for some reason. Maybe it's because she is described as that in one of my favorite scenes of hers when she goes out for a late night walk with Sam and they share a joint together. And she's talking about how she met his father. You know, she was a child of the 70s, it seems.
Yeah.
And they moved to LA from New Jersey and maybe saw herself the next Joni Mitchell. Really dug the LA scene and then fell in love with this man. And I just got the biggest sense of kind of a granola crunchy kind of mom, but not too on the nose about it. It's not, she's definitely not has perfect waves in her hair and peasant blouses and skirts. She has been in mourning, but there is still that sense of no makeup, but intentional.
Yeah.
I just saw a clearly crafted, you know, LA persona in this. Even though on the page, this is kind of maybe a one sentence kind of part.
I actually really liked her in this role.
I did too. Like, more than I thought I would.
Yeah, I liked her a lot. I agree with you. I thought the joint smoking scene was definitely her high point. It, you know, she had two other very strong scenes with Chris Pine, but they mm-hmm. were duet scenes, and you could tell that this was the one that is just like, she's in the driver's seat for this one.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't know, I guess because we're on, oh my God, Michael, this is episode 42.
Yeah, that's right.
And all this stuff, you know, we've sort of gone over about her feelings about her craft and sort of where she was in her life at this point. A lot of the stuff she said, it kind of struck me how it's very possible that this was a very personal role for her, which kind of heightened it even more from what I was already enjoying, just because the monologue she had about wanting to be this great singer, and then her husband put her up on stage in front of these established singers one day, and suddenly she realized, yeah, I was great for New Jersey, but not in LA. Mm-hmm. And it sort of reminded me of those interviews she had around Mother, where she was just like, every day I'm worried people are going to find out I'm a fraud.
Yeah.
And then I also saw an interview with her from around this time, because they were doing a big cover of, you know, she had several movies come out around 2012. Mm-hmm. And she was getting back in the game because her daughter had just gone to college, which she said was definitely a learning curve. And then she only had 1 year left before her son went to college. Mm-hmm. And so kind of having this relationship with her son in this movie, I was just like, I wonder how many like pressure points got hit as she was reading the script that made her sign on to this one.
Yeah, that made her connect back to her and her son maybe.
Yeah, because it's not a huge role, but it definitely allows her a lot of moments to land and land well. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I loved that aside from sort of that first scene when he arrives where she slaps him, it's almost like she needed to get that anger out of her system. And from then on, she's almost just kind of rueful about everything. There's not a whole lot of anger there where it could have been. She sort of just leans back and just kind of this world weariness takes over. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that choice. It gave it a lot more levels than if she was just mad the whole time, which is mm-hmm. possible considering the dialogue she had.
Yeah. And then the scene where Sam confronts her about Frankie for the first time. Mm-hmm. I think if she had been angry the whole time, the how do you describe, to me, it almost felt just like, just a very palpable anger, distress that you can feel in her body when she's trying to shut down this discovery in herself, maybe, and to shut down the situation. Watching her discover that Sam knows this secret that she's known, that I'm sure she thought would never be aired, that she hoped would die with her husband. Seeing that anger in her, I'd never seen that her play that reaction before. That shade of anger, where it's, yeah, a lid being taken off a box. That's the only way I can describe it. It just felt like a very interesting shade of this emotion that I've seen her play tons of times, but in this moment, I was like, whoa, this feels like a different shade to her.
I would agree with that. I also just think it's a very, I mean, it's kind of a new chapter in the Michelle Mamaverse, you know?
Yeah.
This isn't to denigrate it or anything, but this is a very by the book mom role. This mm-hmm. is not a woman with young children like One Fine Day. There's nothing overly horrifying happening like White Oleander.
Yeah.
This certainly isn't Hairspray.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
not Deep End of the Ocean.
Right. It's just a very straightforward face value performance. And I think that's what's new. You know, we're in a contemporary land and sort of a new chapter of her life. I really wanted to look up the age difference between her and Chris Pine, because if I'm honest, even though they don't put her in much makeup, she still looks too young to have Chris Pine as a son.
And she still looks just so great.
She does.
Even if she's got something going on with her heart, plaque around her heart.
Arteriosclerosis.
All right. Even if she's got that, honey, you look amazing. Keep it up. This ain't gonna knock you down for a second. Keep going.
But yeah, it seemed like the first time that I can recollect where she has an adult son, even or an adult child, for that matter.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, the only
at this point, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that does bring different shadings when you are when you're having to have an adult discussion about these things with someone who your equal, rather than it having to explain something down to them.
Yeah. She can let those emotions be as high as she needs to, because she's dealing with somebody who can meet her there.
Right.
She's not having to suppress them or make them easier to digest. And yeah, when she's explaining her decision, you know, I made him choose between either the family I was making with him or the family he made with this other woman that resulted in Frankie. That's such a complex thing. She sells the heck out of it, I think. But yeah, she's not having to play any game like with White Oleander or battle any teenage hormonal thing on the other side of this. Yeah, she's just very frank.
Yeah. And that her final scene where she's explaining her decision, that was the scene of hers where I was just like, y'all are lucky you got Michelle Pfeiffer for this one. Because it had a very, and we're just going to put a nice little bow on this feeling, mm-hmm. if you're just listening to the words.
Mm-hmm.
So it was lucky for them. They got an actress that, and it was not a bad monologue by any means, but it certainly was a, we needed to have this happen sort of mm-hmm. feel. And yeah, she elevates it, which is always, always nice to see.
Oh, I just little moments that I think make me laugh in movies where, you know, when they have their first confrontation about Frankie, Sam and Lillian, the kettle for the tea is boiling. He calls Olivia Wilde on the phone. Before he can get out what he really wants to say, the voicemail cuts off. I always think characters in movies are so funny. They're like, no, I don't need money. Elizabeth Banks says, no, I will not be taking this $150,000. No, I don't need that. The way they make people behave in movies is just hilarious. Just little things. I'm like, okay.
But at least she winds up taking it.
That's true.
Yeah. I feel like they always, like, especially when it's from a will or something, and you've had that just sort of ruptured relationship with your parent, they always have to have that scene where it's just like, I'll be taking none of what they've given me. I said good day, sir.
And then 30 minutes later, you know what? I've thought about it. I'm thinking, I'm gonna take this money. I wrote this question down. I wanna know, what are your 6 rules to your life?
Oh.
Is that too much?
Honey, if you think I've got to a point where I have 6 rules for my life, you are sorely mistaken.
All right, just a question for the table.
We would be on this call for another hour and a half if I had to think of 6 rules for my life. Do you have 6 rules?
No, I was hoping that you would maybe have a couple.
And then we could steal mine.
And then we can help figure out our 6 rules together. We could have a nice little bow to the end of to tie up this movie. What was the thing? God. You know, one of them probably, you know, what is it? Wine before beer, never fear.
Oh.
Beer before liquor, never sicker.
God, you're taking me back to college. Liquor before beer, you're in the clear. Beer before liquor, never been sicker.
Okay. That's 2.
What was the first one?
Well, 1 and then 2.
You're literally counting that as 2, that little nursery rhyme.
Yeah, because I need to make 6. So let's see. 3. I know, like, always, like, change your socks and underwear every day. Well, this was a failed exercise.
You know, we got 2.5. Maybe by the time we get to the Pfeiffer finale, we will have our 6 rules. That okay. Can be part of it.
Okay. Always tip your drag queens. I don't know.
And your bartenders and your baristas.
Yep. Yeah. I just thought that was another fun moment. He's like, one day I'll tell you the 6 rules of life. I'm like, to this kid you've never met before, like you're just meeting today, you're going to tell him the 6 rules someday. Just...
Okay, that was the one thing that I kind of cocked my head at, is the first time that Chris Pine really sees Kiddo, he sees him getting shoved to the ground by like schoolyard bullies.
I thought he was going to get out of the car.
I did too. But I feel like we needed that scene there for Chris Pine to want to befriend this child who is then a complete asshole to him in that record store.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, Chris Pine, are you really just being nice to this kid because you saw him get pushed on the playground? You didn't see what happened. He could have been being a dick to those kids too and got shoved for it. You don't know.
I mean, he pulls like a full mayor of Easttown and hits that child with a book.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's an asshole. I miss Mae Whitman and her kittens.
I do miss Alex D. Lenz. Take us back to superhero day.
Seriously, when that little boy opened the door and introduced himself, the smile on Michelle's face, I said, honey, you can't fool me. You're sick of this kid already, too.
I thought it was sweet, like the smile she gave. That took me back to like One Fine Day times when I was just like, oh, this is watching Michelle with young kids, and it always makes my heart happy.
Maybe it's me just projecting my dislike of this child onto her, but I saw some distaste.
I did appreciate when he's doing that knock on the door that just sounds like a crazy person. The look she gives was just like, the hell is going on at my house right now? Is it
Halloween?
So I really didn't write down any like lines of dialogue for Chris Pine that I enjoyed. None of, even though I thought he did a really solid job, none of them really stuck out to me in order to write them down. But I did love one of Michelle's lines. It was very simple, but when she was talking about being Joni Mitchell, and she just very simply says, she was just like, why can't that be me? Like, that's the only reason she came out to LA is she was just like, why can't I be a superstar? Yeah. And there was just something very sweet and wistful about how she said it that just stuck with me.
Yeah, it's really sweet.
But then the other badass monologue they had in this movie was Elizabeth Banks's at the laundromat.
Oh, yeah. She takes that story.
Yeah, that one hit hard
all over the place
for me. And she's sort of taking Sam beat by beat through her relationship with her dad, which was really wonderful at first because he would come every Sunday and they would go to the park and do all these fun things. And then one day he just disappeared. And the way they end that monologue for her is she said, you know, in that situation, you never ask what's wrong with him. You ask what's wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And there was something about that line of dialogue that was just like, oh, that punched some buttons in my head.
Sure. Yeah. Because
that's a real fucking thing.
Yeah. That's a real question. I know I ask myself that all the time. You know, that can be such a default for people, especially when you're that young. Not to take it all the way back to the Story of Us days we were talking about. But, you know, I never felt that way when it came to my parents splitting up. I never really questioned if it was me. I think I was old enough at that time to realize that it was something separate from me. But they write that very well for her, and she delivers it so well that you absolutely feel what she's feeling.
Yeah.
And for sure, I'm sure Frankie questioned, you know, I should be not standing here in the corner in my nice dress. Maybe I picked the wrong dress. You know, maybe I should be not be standing here in the corner. Should I be waiting for him? Should I be just inserting myself? Yeah. Very real.
So yeah, I think
she does it so well.
I think those were my two favorite moments for the monologues they gave the two women. So Michelle getting high and then Elizabeth Banks in the laundromat were definitely the standouts for me in this one.
And the fact that even though I do give it credit, even though it could have bordered so much towards melodramatic, you know, we don't see them ever have these full-on breakdowns about their situations. I think I really expected Frankie to have a lose it moment, you know. I think the closest she really, even with the outburst that she has when she discovers that Chris Pine is her brother, it's more of a, oh shit, she just threw that lamp at him.
Yeah.
It's more, I think I really much preferred the, how dramatic, you know, her throwing things was instead of her completely maybe breaking down in tears. I think her really expressing her rage outward was more effective than just sobbing about it. But I have to give her credit for that laundromat scene where she keeps it really together.
Yeah, there's no indulgence in Elizabeth Banks's performance, which is kind of why I love it, because I think you could easily have turned that character into sort of a sad sack that is sort of having to be uplifted through this relationship with Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very much just like, I know my life kind of sucks, but I'm paying my bills.
Yep.
I'm taking care of my kid. And there's no time in her performance for her to feel sorry about herself. And that's really refreshing to watch, that she just, it just feels like she's one of those people where it's kind of like everyone has their sad story. Here's mine. Yeah. And we move the fuck along.
Yeah. It's very much a go or stay in her, especially I think until she starts maybe feeling a little bit something else for Chris Pine.
Which I will give this screenplay credit for, that is they managed to walk that tightrope without it ever becoming super uncomfortable. And I think that's another thing that I give credit to both actors, but especially Chris Pine, is there's never any indication that he has any romantic feelings toward her.
Yeah.
Their hangouts always feel very sibling from mm-hmm. him. And even the random little sparks you see in Elizabeth Banks's eyes that this is a guy coming on to her or like trying to be in a relationship with her, they never take it to a creepy place.
No.
And that's something that could have easily happened and it never gets there. So that's another point to this film's credit from my perspective.
Yeah. I was worried it was going to get there.
Yes.
Yeah. And even with Michelle, we never see her get too torn up about losing her husband. And I think the slap that she gives Chris Pine for missing the funeral, I think that's just the right amount that we need of an outburst, really, because he deserved that one. So.
Well, and you get these little flickers that finally do come out in that final monologue, but even one of the things she says on that walking scene with Chris Pine is, I'm not going to be able to get it verbatim, but she very openly says, do you really think I was stupid enough to not know my own husband for all mm-hmm. these years?
Yeah.
And who knows in that context if she's really talking specifically about this other sibling. But yeah, it sounds like her husband had cancer for a long period of time. So it feels like his death is something she had come to terms with before it even happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so now she's moving on as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she gets through the funeral and we're trucking along on her front too.
Mm-hmm. They're really just like us, trucking along.
God damn it.
I think we can really say at the end of our discussion about this, that they really were people.
People like us?
Yeah, people like us. Thank you so much. That's the end of the Pfeiffer Fridays podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, listeners. Jerry has left the chat.
Oh my. Okay. This is one of those movies where I fully expected there to be at least one random nomination for something.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it was going to be. Usually in instances like this, it's the younger actor being nominated for, you know, young person acting award that we've never heard of. That's what it always is.
Yeah. I just like the award title, the young person acting award. I would have won that award.
And the young person's acting award for best performance by a young person acting goes to none of that here.
None of it happened.
Which I guess isn't totally surprising because of how just sort of
below the radar this fell.
Yeah, under the radar as well as harmless. I mean, there are things to praise and things to sort of critique about it, but it's not doing much just shockingly well or shockingly bad enough.
It's pretty inoffensive.
Yeah. So yeah, I was a little surprised that there was just nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Would we have nominated Michelle for this movie, for this performance?
No, I wouldn't have. I would have been more leaning to nominate Elizabeth Banks if I was going to nominate somebody from this. I don't think I would nominate Michelle.
Despite the fact that I would almost put money down that they were campaigning Elizabeth Banks lead for this.
Sure.
Whereas Michelle is far and away supporting. No, mm-hmm. no coin flipping on that one.
Yeah, that's pretty much, I would agree.
But yeah, I did, as a supporting actress lover, I did love the 2012 race, even if Anne Hathaway steamrolled through it for Les Mis.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had Amy Adams in The Master. Well, no, scratch that. You had Anne Hathaway. You had Sally Field for Lincoln. And you had Helen Hunt for The Sessions. And those were your mainstays. Like, those were your three. They were there every fucking time.
Yeah.
Then you had the other trio of Amy Adams for The Master, Nicole Kidman for The Paperboy, and Dame Maggie for the best Marigold Hotel.
Yes.
And Amy got in that Oscar race. And then out of nowhere, Jackie Weaver was just like, I'm here, bitches. That fifth slot is mine.
She came racing in with her coffee and bars.
Yeah, she came in hot with them Krabby Snacks and said, that fifth slot, me. This one.
God bless her.
I mean, it feels like it's rare when we talk about any acting races that Michelle really could have sort of factored in, where there isn't a very clear-cut five,
mm-hmm.
or at minimum five and a sixth that were just like, these were them.
Mm-hmm.
This was kind of a tumultuous year, because mm-hmm. aside from those three locks who were everywhere, you really were sort of coin flipping until the last minute for those other two slots.
Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't matter because Jackie Weaver was there.
Yeah, just the love for Silver Linings Playbook was just very strong.
But as much as I liked her in this performance, and I think she's doing as much, if not more, than Jackie Weaver, another just by the book mom performance. Mm-hmm. Again, nothing like,
yeah, they're basically the very similar types of roles.
Yeah, it's nothing to negate. I love me some Jackie Weaver, but they're rather similar in mm-hmm. in their roles. I wouldn't have put her above some of those other non-nominated performances.
Yeah,
especially like, I don't care how you feel about The Paperboy. Nicole Kidman should have been Oscar nominated for The Paperboy.
Just for the cojones alone, just to just dive into that world. Yeah, for sure. I probably would have put her in there alongside Anne, Sally, Helen, and Amy. I think I would have put Nicole in there for The Paperboy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, was this around the time that Maggie Smith was doing Downton Abbey? Was that?
Oh, she was well into still on Downton Abbey at this point.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So, yes, this is just in the Downton Abbey heyday where it's just like, oh my God, Maggie Smith. So.
And she was the standout of that movie.
That's been a while since I've even.
It's charming.
Oh.
It's a charming movie. And Maggie Smith is the standout. And now I'm having trouble remembering if she got Globe and SAG. No. I don't think she did. I think Nicole got both.
I think Nicole did get both. Let me put Maggie Smith.
And then Maggie got Globe and Amy got SAG?
She didn't get the Globe.
Yeah, so Amy and Nicole. So that must have been it. Amy got the Globe and Maggie got the SAG. And that's when everyone started talking about, oh, Amy Adams is vulnerable for The Master. The fourth slot is Nicole Kidman's. And the fifth mm-hmm. is going to be between Amy Adams and Maggie Smith, because Maggie yeah. Smith was winning all the Downton Awards.
Yeah. And that year was, you know, with the cast of Best Exotic, Marigold Hotel, that did get the ensemble nomination. So they always love to do that at SAG, where spotlight an actor from an ensemble if they can. But yeah, I really liked that year. But, you know, maybe with Jackie Weaver aside, you know, Anne Hathaway did steamroll through that. But I would have loved to have given Amy her Oscar for The Master if we could have. If we weren't going to give it, if Melissa Leo canceled her out for The Fighter.
I was about to say, in my perfect universe, Amy already had hers for The Fighter. Strangely, I go with the two people who already had Oscars. Like, I love Sally Field in Lincoln.
I loved
Helen Hunt in The Sessions. For mm-hmm. some reason, those were my ride or dies, like just sentimental favorites, knowing that Anne Hathaway was going to win everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I was glad that they were the mainstays across the board, because I loved them in those movies.
Yeah. I remember really loving what Sally Field was doing in Lincoln, but I also really loved Anne Hathaway since I was a little kid with The Princess Diaries. So to see her get this recognition possibly, I was like, well, no, I'm in the Anne Hathaway camp because I want her to win an Oscar because I love her so much. The theater kid in me saw the theater kid in her and we just bonded. But I really couldn't deny Sally Field. I was like, she's actually really great. Her scenes with Daniel Day-Lewis are just killer.
Yeah.
So I totally saw her as a dark horse and was like, well, wouldn't hate it.
If I were a betting man, I would definitely say that Sally Field was a distant second.
Because that was a big year where I was really clocking a lot of the, really clocking who was winning these kind of critics awards from around the country, especially because I was so in the Anne camp that I just wanted to see whatever she was winning because she was winning so much.
Yeah.
It was like, well, what did she win next? But I saw Sally Field creeping up there with career tributes. She was winning a couple things. She didn't lose everything to Anne. So I was like, uh-oh, nail biting. I'm like, she's coming. But no, really, she really did just steamroll it.
Yeah,
it was a good year. It was a good year for the supporting actresses. Some really interesting performances. And I don't think Michelle was even going to get a spot at the starting gate.
No, usually even for something small like this, she has at least one, especially this far into the awards game when every city has their critics awards.
Mm-hmm.
Usually she would have shown up on somebody's radar, you know, the greater Indianapolis Critics Awards for supporting actress, something random like that.
Yeah.
No, not even a blip. Anything else about People Like Us? Do we like Michelle in this movie? Do we recommend her performance?
It's not one that I would immediately rush people to go or tell people to rush and go watch. You know, it's a very rainy day here in New York. So it was a very nice rainy day movie to just put on. Perfect movie for this type of day. So in that case, if that's what you're looking for, I'd really recommend it more for Elizabeth Banks. You get to see a really different side of her. If you just know her from her really comedy character actressy vibes, you know, if you just know her from The Hunger Games or from 30 Rock or from the Pitch Perfect movies.
Yeah.
You know, and this was so exciting to see a different side of her. I really enjoyed that aspect of this movie. So in that way, I'd recommend it. And then I'd say, well, you get a good Michelle performance in there too. And you get Chris Pine too, doing something different from what we were seeing at the time with his Star Trek movies. Oh.
Yeah. So I would say this is one that, yeah, like you said, you just sort of throw on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to change your life. It's not going to be your favorite movie.
No,
but it at least has strong performances from people you probably already enjoy. So it's worth it from that perspective.
Yeah.
What a lovely recommendation we've given this movie.
I know. You're welcome. Thank you. People should be thanking us. We are giving them comfort viewing. We are in these troubling, confusing times, we are doing a service.
I do feel like we're very kind when we're not super passionate about a movie. Just kind of like, you know, if you were to put this on, it's not the worst choice you'll ever make. You might enjoy, you'll enjoy something.
Yeah. I mean, we've definitely been like steer so clear from.
I was about to say, listen here, you know full well 42 episodes in, we will tell you with no qualms if you shouldn't put this movie on.
And I know we've got some coming up that maybe we will tell you not to put it on. And I know in the past, we've definitely told you to steer so clear, but this one, you know, ain't gonna kill you.
No, it is a fine 2 hour 45 minute movie.
2 hour 45 minutes.
1 hour 45 minutes. I kept thinking of it as a 2 hour movie. No, dear Jesus, if it were 2 hour 45 minute movie, we we would have had a lot more commentary, believe you me.
People like us, people hate us. Jesus.
Yeah. These people were not like us. And we did not like these people. Either way you emphasize it, it did not achieve it. So I guess
six degrees
that means,
time.
Yeah, I guess that means we are coming up on 6 degrees.
Alrighty. I know we've been doing so much. I say that like we've had just guests for the last 15 episodes. We've had 2 episodes with guests.
We do two guests in a row and suddenly we're out of practice.
And I'm like, what is our format anymore? I looked at my 6 degrees like spreadsheet of the people that we give each other and I'm like, how did I format this again? So embarrassing. Anyway, 6 degrees is the game we play to round out our episodes where we each give each other the name of an actor or an actress and we connect them back to Michelle's filmography in 6 people or less. I have no clue who went last time when we've been doing just the two of us.
Why don't you give first? I want to receive first this time.
Okay. Yeah, so my person for you is Dakota Johnson.
Ah, okay. Are you sure we haven't done Dakota Johnson before?
I am looking and looking and looking.
Okay. So Michelle is in One Fine Day with George Clooney, who is in Michael Clayton with Miss Tilda Swinton, who is pulling triple duty opposite Dakota Johnson in Suspiria.
Oh, she sure is.
As well as Bigger Splash? That's both of them too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We love a Tilda Gateway.
Oh, yes.
So I went a little bit earlier than you for my choice. And this is once again, one of those that I was just like, I'm fairly certain I haven't given Michael this, but correct me if I'm wrong. I am giving you Julie Christie.
I have a really like a one and done. Let me see if I can do another one.
I have a one and done, but it may be different because my one and done we can't do because we had retired the connection.
Okay.
Michael, you do this every time. Do your one and done. Show your strength.
Okay. I know. I want to make it sound like I am smart and intelligent and just like, oh yeah, let me spin my web. Let me see. So Julie Christie is in Finding Neverland with Johnny Depp, who is in...
We retired Murder on the Orient Express.
We didn't retire Dark Shadows, honey.
Oh, fuck a duck. That's right. We should have retired Johnny Depp. We really should have.
Add a full stop.
All right. 8 episodes left. We're retiring Johnny Depp.
New rule. No. Any movie. Nothing. No Johnny Depp.
Okay. Then we did have the same one connection. And I am proud of you because I feel like some people forget that Julie Christie is amazing in Finding Neverland. So I'm very happy that you brought that up.
That movie was always on growing up.
Yeah.
We loved Finding Neverland in our house.
Oh, that was one. I know we watched it when it first came out on DVD, but that was not a mainstay in our house by any means.
That's like we wanted a good tearjerker. We just put on Finding Neverland.
Oh, yeah. That... definitely remember it being a weeper.
When
she goes to Neverland, my mom I thought was about to fall off the couch. I'm just like, yes.
It's really the scene at the end when he and little Freddie Highmore are sitting on the bench and he's crying about it.
Yeah.
That's what gets me every time.
Did you see Finding Neverland on stage?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
One of the angriest theater experiences I've ever had.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about flames on the side of my face.
Well, and the reason I was mad is because I was hating every second of it. We saw the tour.
Okay.
And
I saw it on Broadway.
And I'm sorry. And I'm just sitting there like, oh my God, what did they do to this? And then they got to the end where, you know, if you haven't seen it, spoiler alert, she dies and goes to Neverland. and they did that effect, and I started crying. And I was just like, this show does not deserve my tears. And now I am furious.
Yeah. I'm like, this is a beautiful piece of stagecraft. I will acknowledge that. But everything else is garbage.
Yes, this show is terrible. Why am I crying?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Furious.
Exactly. And well, Fiverr fans, this is... This has been another episode of Fiverr Fridays. I am Michael McLean, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Michael D. McLean.
And I am Jerry Downey, and you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at JerryDowney913.
Please remember to rate and review. Blah, blah, blah. Please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It makes us easier to find so we can continue to spread the Michelle gospel. You can also find updates about the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Fiverr Fridays. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you again next week for Fiverr Fridays.
I guess maybe we could both start trying to be
people.
I told him it was my fault. That you were always so far away. And he said, just watch. Sam's going to surprise you.